The following podcast is a live recording of a radio show first broadcast by Fresh FM with assistance from New Zealand On Air.
Good morning or good afternoon. You're on Fresh FM with Ben Vidgins, the Deadline Report. And my special guest today is Alexa Forbes, Councillor for Regional Otago Council. Have I pronounced that correctly, Alexa?
Otago Regional Council. I'm from the Dunstan Ward for Otago Regional Council.
What I would thought I'd talk to you today a little bit about is the thing that's capturing a lot of people's attention is the issue with fast-tracking. And I'm very interested in Shane Jones has sort of basically come out, and it's not just down in Otago. He's, you know, talked about Westport and other places as well, where he's basically saying that regional councils have to go and there's no place for them because they're basically not letting him do what he wants to do. What are your thought process on, you know, where Shane Jones is coming about and what's actually motivating it?
Well, I think it's a lot of bluster. I mean, what's he on about, really? He reacted very strongly to a report that said that we shouldn't be extending the McRae's mine, right? So that's what he was reacting to. But that report was prepared by qualified professionals under the current Resource Management Act. It's all legal. Technical evidence-based assessment. It's not a political statement. It's not ideological. It's nothing to do with the ideological perspectives of individual councillors. It's a report. And that is produced under the laws of the day. And our staff are doing their job within the law as it stands. And if the government seeks to change that law, well, we sit and wait for clear direction and leadership through reform. So the name calling to me just seems a bit childish, really. It's bluster. He's upset because he's not getting what he wants. And the fact is, it's not our job to sit there and ask how high he wants us to jump when he says jump. If he doesn't like the way that local government's set up, then he might want to get a rational debate on reform, which the last government tried to do. But, you know, it's not that the Otago Regional Council is, in his quote, as he said, opposed to my mining projects. It's not that. We are looking at the environmental impacts of it, as we should. We're not destroying jobs. We're not conveniently discovering moths that no one's heard about to scuttle expansions of mining projects. We have a system of regional government that's there to be focused on its responsibility to protect the environment and support sustainable economic development, but not at the expense of the environment. And it's not ideological. And he's acting like it's ideological. It's not. We reflect the law. This is quite clear. We have a law. We have an application under that law. We get reports by consultants or the experts under that law. And then we look at the recommendations. And that's what's happened. He doesn't like the recommendation. So suddenly we're in the Kremlin.
Well, that's what I thought was quite funny because, I mean, you know, on the council, I guess you would be probably more of the left leading. I mean, it's not exactly like it's a overly progressive Liberal council. I mean, it is a relatively largely a conservative council, mostly focused on business interests. Is that an incorrect interpretation?
I don't think the left-right divide is very helpful now.
No.
But our council has been known for its great conservatism in the past.
Yeah.
I think it's less so now. If you look at our strategic directions over the past couple of long-term plans, or particularly the last long-term plan, you'll find that it's moved into a much more progressive space or conservation space. Isn't it funny, the word conservative and the word conservation, they come from the same thing, but, you know, they're a bit different. We've got environment, and resilience, climate, transport and communities are our key words there, and partnership with Kaitahu. So that's, and we've got goals set under each of those areas, which are really important. And we know what our roles are, and we try and deliver those as best as we can. And while the council has been very conservative in the past, it's not I think it's really now sticking to its knitting a bit and trying to deliver good outcomes for those things, because that's what our community has told us that it wants.
And it's not just on the issue of mining, though, that he's come out
for. It wants to plan for and invest in initiatives that reduce emissions and helps with adaptation. It wants to build, our communities want to build resilience in ways that contribute to communities and environment through well-planned responses to shocks and stresses and whatever anybody wants to do somewhere. We want a healthy environment from the mountains to the sea. And, of course, OIC, the Otago region, stretches from those headwaters, the very high headwaters, right down to the coast. So it's a huge environmental span and a big geography too. So we're looking for really healthy ecosystems and communities and flourishing biodiversity. We know that that's what will underpin economic management in the future, because economy has got to sit within the constraints of environment, and you start running into trouble when it doesn't, as we have seen. We're also responsible for public transport, of course.
Of course, yeah.
Yeah. And iwi have a great role in that, and we have a very, very good relationship with iwi, and we work on that quite hard and make sure we understand their perspective, that, and we represent this through a mana-to-mana meeting every quarter. So, and we work with Aukaha and Tau Marama. They're the Papatipu Runaka Consultancy Services.
Right.
So one, Ohaka is more the Otago, the north side of the Clutha River, and Tau Marama is more the other side. They represent Kaitahiki, Murihiki.
Yeah.
So we work through them, and they're resourced. We pay them to participate in some of the development and design and decision-making. And if anybody wants is interested in having a look at a really, really superb document, there's one prepared by Aukaha on the economic development, the Māori economy within our area.
Right.
Fascinating. Really, really good work. And these things guide us, and very sensibly. We do it, we're not so much a very conservative council now, but we do still operate in a relatively conservative way by taking a lot of data on board and moving relatively slowly, and a lot of people think too slowly.
Well, I guess, I mean, you know, it's sort of interesting because, you know, I took a lot of his objections on the Skinner remark coming from the fact that, you know, you're not letting the mining emigres do exactly what they want to do. But he's also come out previously in favour of, I think it's the billionaire, is it Rick Kane, who's a golf course developer, that in 2004, prior to the government coming out, was saying, well, I'm not going to come into New Zealand, they won't let me do what I want to do with the golf courses. And now that there's that change of government, and, you know, Shane Jones just is saying, well, this developer should be allowed fast-tracking to do what he wants for his golf courses, which, you know, you've run into this problem with Peter Thiel. So, again, where's this sort of lineup with the government where they can, like, give gold tickets to billionaire immigrants that then come around and feel like they can sort of pretty much do what they want and use their money to push local government around? Is that, do you think that's driving Jones's comments? I mean, you know, is this an issue that you're finding?
Definitely aspects of this government trying to push local government around.
Mm.
There's a lot of that, and it's all the way through, right from, you know, Christopher Luxon and Nicola Willis telling, and who was the minister then, I can't remember, Chris Bishop maybe, I can't remember, telling local government to stick to their knitting and just do their things and stop acting like they were, you know, giving out candy from a candy store, whatever the phrases were.
Yeah.
But insulting and name-calling of local government like that is really unhelpful.
Yep.
Local government have very few tools to do what they want to do. They're closer to their local communities. They're guided by them. And I feel that this government is really sort of pushing them down and treating them badly and pushing, you know, things like Three Waters is a classic example.
Yeah.
I mean, what is the difference between the Three Waters proposed by the last government and the local water done well by this government? Well, a whole pile of $1 million and not much else. But it's you've got a situation where government keeps pushing more and more responsibility onto local government and then getting upset when local government has to charge somebody some money for that.
Right.
And there are real fails in local government. We do see that. That does happen. Happens in private business too, by the way, and central government. Real fails happen. And trying to prevent those fails is a really, really good thing to do. Fast-track approvals, oh, they're very difficult. But the thing is that local government, because of the Resource Management Act, because of its requirements to consult everybody, it necessarily moves very slowly. I mean, how do you examine environmental protections or the environmental impacts of a golf course in 5 minutes? You can't.
Right. But also the fast-tracking,
remove
the Minister of Environment.
How do you get a democratic process happening in 5 minutes?
Mm.
You can't. These things, you know, these things take time, and for people to expect to do them quickly and for them to expect to be able to undermine environmental protections, I think that's just wrong. And my real worry with Fast-Track Approvals Act is the potential to undermine environmental protection by moving too fast. And also democratic processes. Democratic processes are really difficult in New Zealand, and for a democratic process to work really well, you've got to have a well-informed public. Hard. We don't necessarily have that. But to be able to just bypass existing environmental regulations and public consultation, that to me doesn't seem right.
I've sort of spoke to you previously about the special economic zones, which is something, you know, that's only just coming to the table and a lot of people aren't familiar with it. But looking at the papers, it's talking about, you know, special economic zone is basically an area where the rules don't apply and the people within those areas can do what they want. And this is something that, again, Shane Jones is looking at for Queenstown and for Northland and for Buller. And, you know, these documents sort of talk about special economic zones work well when they're done in conjunction with local government and there's compromise. But it seems that what really Shane Jones is about is that he wants to push away any challenge to the system. And even with the fast tracking, you've got, you know, a system which is the Minister of Environment's not involved in it. And it just seems like, you know, this is actually quite a serious attack on our democracy.
Yeah, I think it is. I think it is a serious attack on our democracy. I think it's and on our environment.
Mm.
It's looking for ways to not actually have to abide by those rules. Those rules are in place for a reason.
Mm.
And they're all consulted. It's not like they're just shoved through. They've been around for a long time for reasons. And those reasons are to protect environment, to protect communities, to ensure that we are operating in a democratic way. And I think that's a bit difficult. You know, you sometimes have to push through things like infrastructure development. It's really hard to get infrastructure development through because it always impacts people around the infrastructure and always impacts the environment.
Right.
But we still manage to do that without having to race through things badly. I mean, the main reason things are done badly infrastructurally, like, for example, the Queenstown wastewater plant, I think is because we won't spend enough money and invest enough in them, not because of hold-ups environmentally or hold-ups in consultation. So I don't really know where we're going to get to. And they seem to think in the special environment zones that they'll get some increased investment and job creation and economic growth in their designated areas. But, you know, it's just not all about that. There's a lot of things that communities are about that are not profit-driven. And markets are fantastic for doing things where there's a profit and they can be incredibly innovative, but there's lots of things that aren't profitable that have to be done by government, and that seems to be looked past. And when they're telling local government to stick to their knitting of, infrastructure and wastewater, the three waters, and transport perhaps, it's like, well, who do you want to look after libraries?
Mm.
Do you want communally owned swimming pools and gyms? Well, some communities do, ours does. And who's going to do that? There's not profit in those things.
But it's also
Profit in public transport either, for that matter.
Well, that's a bugbear. I mean, to me, one of the biggest problems I feel about the whole issue about our response to climate change is that we don't put enough, you know, we're asking people to support this idea about climate change, but we're not really doing a lot for public transportation. It's one of the things which, you know, I feel that if we want to get less people driving the vehicles, we need to spend more money on that infrastructure. And it seems that that's the problem with public-private partnership, is that, yeah, great, bring in all this investment, but no one's actually putting any investment back into the things that, you know, keep us moving around.
No, they're not. And there's also this problem with people wanting to invest in shiny new things, and I might say a gondola in Queenstown, but not wishing to put the foundations in place or the maintenance in place for the things that aren't so shiny and new. For example, for any public transport system to work well, you must have your active transport routes in place.
Yeah.
It's got to be safe for the 8-year-old to be able to walk out their door and walk to their bus stop or bike. And if you can't make it safe for people to walk out their door, if they've got to cross roads and things like that, you haven't got something safe for the 8-year-old. Or let's say if you think 8's too young, think of 14-year-old. They still can't drive and they've got to get about the place. And we should be designing public transport and active transport systems for them. And it's one of the big problems I have with these ideas of gondolas as mass public transport. And they do work. They work well in parts of the world. And I think that's a really good thing. But you've got to figure out how you're going to get people to those transport stations, to the gondola stations. Yeah. They're not, you know, they're not right in the heart of where people are living. They're not 400 meters from everyone's door. And so you're going to have a decent system in place to get people there. And it's those foundations that we build things on that seem to not get done.
Yeah.
And that's really annoying.
I can believe so. So, I mean, we're obviously going to be heading into an election year in the next period. And, you know, what happens? Do we have a change in government? And we go back to, I mean, what I'm basically saying is, what do you think is going to happen, and, you know, with change? Do you think a lot of what he's doing is being driven by the fact that he knows he's got limited time and he's just trying to bulldoze through as much as he can?
Well, I'm actually gobsmacked that a party that got so little of the actual popular vote has this much power in our government.
Mm.
And that goes for both of the minor parties of the coalition. It's incredible that they can push things through that are often ideological, they're not practical, and they often counter the laws we've got in place, which is why we need new laws like fast tracks bills and all these other bills that are being pushed through under urgency. And that to me is really problematic. As to where things are going, I'm not sure. We do need a reform of local government, but I think we are headed to quite a serious sort of collapse, because it's really the governments of both colours in New Zealand are still operating under that neoliberal system.
Yeah.
And until somebody changes, that's pretty tricky to get around it. And the neoliberal system does view that the market will fix everything and that the private rights are more important, particularly private property rights, are more important than the collective good. So, you know, when you're subscribing to that, it's pretty hard to make decisions that are good collectively. And also, you've got a basic problem in the way that we view our economy, too, as able to push past the environmental barriers. It just can't. And it's a pretty nutty world when a tree standing in a forest doing all its work for carbon and human health and forest health and all that is worth a whole lot more when it's cut down and shipped off as a commodity to somewhere else in the world. It's things, you sort of look at those things and go, these don't make sense. And yet that's the economic base of our country.
Oh.
And, you know, me, Ben, this has been a problem for a very long time. And it's just getting worse and worse. So I think we are headed, I mean, we're seeing the impacts of climate change on our weather systems now. We're not seeing people willing to change. And I'm not saying people should be willing to change necessarily, but they really, most people are in denial as to what their four-wheel drive is causing. They're very willing just to jump in a single person into a car, and which makes things like public transport very hard. They're very willing to engage in habits and lifestyles that are highly consumptive. And unless you have some sort of boundaries in place from a legal perspective, you won't really stop people doing that because the market is allowed just to push consumption past those barriers, our environmental barriers.
But doesn't it also seem a bit strange that
there's a really big problem there, which I don't think either of our types of governments that we get in place are going to move. I think we're going to have to probably move that dial from a very local perspective, which is a shame because that's much slower. But I think that's what's going to have to happen, and we haven't actually got time with the sorts of impacts on our weather that climate change is happening and is bringing, and that's happening very, very fast, much faster than we thought probably, much faster than the conservative reports that the IPCC has adopted. And so we are seeing more of those weather events and more of that sort of trouble, and our soil's degrading, our air's degrading. A lot of our water is ending up in the air as water vapor, so our aquifers are all degrading. These things, you can take some efforts locally, and I think that's probably where we have to go next.
Mm.
To do that, we're going to need to empower local councils, not strip them of everything. I think there is a case for local government reform. I don't think just getting rid of a layer, i.e. the regional councils, as Shane Jones is calling for, will do anything helpful at all. Centralising those things will be very difficult. I don't really think you can run those things centrally. I think it's you need to be close to your catchments. It's kind of not really quite like a police force, which is run nationally. So I don't know where that'll go, but certainly my attempts, my work now will move into a much more local neighbourhood space.
My issue when it comes to the issue about climate change is we see billionaires flying off to conferences to discuss climate change in Learjets, but I don't see any way where the profits that come from the for the carbon trading is filtered down. It's people are basically given a stick to improve, but they're not given any incentive at an individual level. It seems only at an industrial corporate level is there any way to actually get any benefit off this shareholders' investment in sustainability.
That's right. And, I guess that is a big part of it. And a lot of it is attempts just to keep business as usual going.
Mm.
I think I had some interesting, one of my students came up with an interesting bit of research for her master's thesis about trying to make sustainability work in businesses, tourism businesses she was concentrating on.
Yeah.
And it really doesn't. You can't implement strong, sustainable practices without taking a cut to the bottom line.
Right.
Was basically where her research.
Well, it's interesting because, I mean, one of the cases I heard was actually it was done at Otago University, but it was actually done for Auckland City Council. And the idea was that when you actually invest in public transportation, it actually brings tourism to your hub. So the idea is that you're creating an industry which is reducing your footprint, but it's actually bringing customers to you. So it becomes a win-win situation.
Public transport, if just to talk about that for a moment, has so many benefits and so few downsides, it's incredible. Benefits, I mean, you can do studies all over the place. I used to be a member of the Transport Research Network Group until it was defunded under this government. But anyway, I was a volunteer member of that organisation, and they had research from all over the world, and the public benefit that public transport brings is huge. Okay, so you've got the climate reduction, reducing carbon, and they do so, but with incremental improvement, we're moving towards all public buses being electric. I think that starts from 2029, but people are all moving towards it now. You've got the health benefits of people walking, and because all public transport requires active transport first. You have to walk to a stop or whatever. It relieves congestion. It has people walking more around central city areas, which means that they spend more. It's very hard to spend money from your car except in the drive-through. So it increases foot traffic. It increases community cohesion. The benefits are legion of public transport, and yet we seem really opposed to investing properly in it. land use in New Zealand makes public transport expensive to deliver. It's much easier to deliver public transport where people are living closer and, you know, the not these sort of single-story houses stretching ribbon-like down the highways. In the sort of suburbs that we live, that makes it all a bit difficult, but it's still possible.
Well, I mean, I would have actually thought the small transient towns, you know, again, for example, looking at, you know, the cycleways for Otago, I mean, I would have thought, again, that they lent themselves towards, you know, it's much easier to go and live in a nice transient town where you actually only takes you 10 minutes to walk up and down the town than to go and live in Auckland or go and live in Wellington. That's what I would have thought if you incorporate it with things like, you know, food, forests and, you know, just a general kind of we can use less resources by living closer than actually living in cities where you've got to travel backwards and forwards across the city.
Absolutely. Yeah, you can. You can live closer and live better. But then, of course, there's a bit of hijacking of the... I think that's what mostly that 15-minute city idea was about. But that sort of got hijacked by people not, I suppose, conspiracy-type people thinking that we were looking at locking people up within 15 minutes of where they live, which, of course, wasn't the point at all. The point was that you had most things available to you within a 15-minute walk of where you live.
This was Alexa Forbes from the Otago Regional Council down in Queenstown. Thank you for appearing on the Deadline Report, Kira of Fresh FM up here in Nelson.
Thank you. Bye for now.
My pleasure.
The podcast you just listened to was a live recording of a radio show, first broadcast on Fresh FM, with support from New Zealand On Air. Fresh FM is a community access media station based in Te Tauihu, the top of the South Island, New Zealand. The funding of Access Media makes these podcasts possible. To find similar programs by other community access media stations, go online to accessmedia.nz. If you or your group would like to know more about how you can have a program on our station, please contact us. Visit our website, freshfm.net, for our contact details.